This is Trend Following Radio, where great thinking comes alive. Nobel Prize winners, legendary traders, best-selling authors, and the pros that know what drive us irrational human beings. I am your host, Michael Covell. Not filtered, raw, honest. That's my passion. No great introduction here. A little interview I did recently. That means somebody interviewing me. And I thought, this is pretty cool. Let's throw it on my show. Enjoy.
So my biggest questions are, I always kind of like to go back to the beginning, kind of what got you started on researching the Turtle Traders? What got you started on writing trading books and going into this?
In the early to mid 90s, I was a freshly minted MBA from Florida State University. Not exactly the pipeline to Wall Street, but that's where I wanted to go. I went to the alumni office at Florida State. I found one guy that was on Wall Street. And he was just the recently retired CEO of Salomon Brothers. So my very first Wall Street meeting was with the recently retired CEO of Salomon Brothers, one of the biggest investment banks at the time. That was a great conversation. Took a lot of attitude away from him. Did not get a job with Salomon Brothers. But walking out of that meeting, within a couple days, I was in a Borders bookshop. I picked up a magazine. It was Wall Street's top 100 paid for the year. In there was these 100 names. Some of them we all know, George Soros, et cetera, stuff like that. But there were some names I had no clue who they were, but these were men in their 30s and 40s and just making boatloads of money. One guy, I think he was number 35 on the list, was this guy named Jerry Parker. It was like literally three sentences. And it said, Jerry Parker, a turtle trader trained by, maybe it didn't say turtle trader, maybe they said turtle, I can't remember, trained by Richard Dennis, this trader on Wall Street in Chicago, in fact. He had made $35 million at the age of 37 in 1 year. It said he was not using fundamentals. He was using a trend tracking system. So here I was, a guy who did terrible at accounting, who could have cared less about reading balance sheets. Now here I was reading just a little blurb in a magazine about a guy who was doing none of that and making a fortune. And at that light bulb moment, I was like, well, if he exists, that means anyone can do it. Maybe that's a crazy thought, but that's what I thought. If he exists, and he did exist, I thought anyone could do it, and this must be some kind of secret that they're not talking about in the MBA programs. And that was the start of learning right there.
So you start there, obviously, and then now, when did the Turtle Trader actually let you tell the story? So, because we're going to talk about Turtle Traders a lot, what is the, gave your background. Now, what is the origin story of the Turtle Traders? I'll probably butcher it, but I know it, but I'll probably get it wrong. But I mean, how did it come about? My layman version is, I always tell people the best way to figure it out is watch Trading Places. Now, I know it's a lot more elaborate than that, but how did Turtle Traders come about? How did that competition begin?
So in the mid-1970s, a close to 300-pound, 6'2" in Chicago named Richard Dennis was trading on the floor, and he was making a bloody fortune. He had made $1 million by the age of 25. I mean, fantastic. $1 million in...
Oh, sure, especially in the 70s.
Yeah, $1 million in mid-1970s when you're 25. He's one of the biggest guys around. Anyways, he makes a couple hundred million by the age of 37, right around the time Trading Places came out, around 1982. Now I'm just relaying the story, what happened. I wasn't around at the time. I have to dig back and find and uncover all this. He makes his first million in the mid-70s. He gets to his late 30s. He's made a couple hundred million. In 1981, 1982, there would have been two great traders on the planet, Richard Dennis and George Soros. Mr. Dennis and his partner go to see the movie Trading Places. They walk out, and this guy, Richard Dennis, who's made all this money, says, we can do that. And his partner's like, what are you talking about? We can take people off the street. And his partner's like, what do you mean we can take people off the street? We can train people to be like me. And his partner's like, no way, man. You're a savant. You're innate. You're a gifted, brilliant dude. We can't make people be like you. And this guy, Richard, was like, no, we can't. They made a bet. I don't know if there's really any money. They put ads in the Wall Street Journal and Barron's, and they wanted to hire trainees. Thousands of people replied because a lot of people knew who Richard Dennis was at the time. He was in all the magazines and stuff. They hired around 20 people, 20 students. He nicknamed them the Turtles because he had been to a turtle breeding farm in Singapore and he wanted to grow traders like they were growing turtles there. That's one version of the story that I've heard. I've heard he also liked the band The Turtles, Happy Together song, all that fun stuff. So anyways, he hires these students. He says, okay, sit down in the office. They give them 2 weeks of training. 2 weeks, that's it. They give them rules. They say, here are your rules you're going to trade. They stake them with money. 4 years later, that group of approximately 20 people, they had made $100 million profit. Then they left the program. They went out on their own. They all started hedge funds. They all made a ton of money. And then that was when I read the one little article about one of the turtles after he had left the cocoon of working for Richard Dennis.
The first question I always, and I'm sure many listeners will come to, and I've seen the quote many times by Dennis, but it's like, obviously you're simplifying years of stuff here, but I mean, if it really is that easy, why doesn't just everyone take 2 weeks of training and make $100 million?
I've had a guy in my podcast named Anders Ericsson. He is a psychology professor. He is the guy that developed all of the research behind deliberate practice. Malcolm Gladwell took his work and made it more famous. But if you listen to Anders Ericsson, if you understand what he's talking about, there's your answer. Most people are just full of shit. Most people are lazy. Most people don't want to do anything. That's why there's casinos in Vegas, because all those folks think they're actually investing when they're sitting at slot machines. There's your answer. You made a point when we talked. You said, I'm 5'8". I can't be Michael Jordan. Well, you could have been Spud Webb. Spud Webb got to the NBA too. Muggsy Bogues got to the NBA at 5'3". Now, those are the extreme outliers. You're right. Probably on average, what's the average guy in the NBA? 6'4", 6'6"? But when it comes to the matters of the mind, when it comes to discipline and deliberate practice, there's your answer. Now, look, of course, there's going to be volatility in returns of individuals applying anything. You might do the exact same effort as some guy over here. You might make $1 million over the course of a lifetime, and maybe he makes $1 billion. But you know what? You can't use that as a judge. That's freaking luck. I mean, if some young person comes to you and says, hey, my goal is to make $1 billion, $1 million, fine. But $1 billion? Come on, that's luck. There's only a couple thousand people on the planet out of 7.5 billion people. I mean, do the statistics. The reality is everyone can do well, but they have to understand something like deliberate practice. They have to stick with it. But, you know, hey, casinos are easier.
Actually, I love that point. Thank you. Because, I mean, that's something I talk about on the 150 episodes into the podcast all the time. I'm like, listen, can you make good money doing this? Especially on one of the things I talk about to a lot of people is make trading like your side hustle. I mean, listen, there's no health insurance in trading. There's no retirement plan. There's no paid time off. There's no benefits at all. But I think that one of the best ways to make some good money, to whether pay off debt or save it or go on a vacation, is trading. And I think that one of the biggest reasons we all hear these 90% failure rate stats is because people, they're not happy with 10 grand a month or 100 grand a year. They want to make that billion, and it's just not realistic. That's what I love about what you just said is we call it the Steady Trade Podcast, because the idea is, listen, if you learn these rules, whether you're trend following or whether you're using some other sort of strategy, you can really supplement your income, and you can do it from a laptop, really anywhere, if you follow the rules.
If you follow the rules, but most people don't want to follow the rules. Look, I get emails all day long. The ideas that people have for trading, the ways they think they can make money, it's pretty loopy out there. I mean, look, unfortunately, and this is not just some tout of my work or my books, they're all of them, more than two, are very well researched. You can go find all of the end notes, the bibliography, etc. It's not just Mike Covell spouting off some opinion. However, you can also go to Amazon and you can find books about GAN and Elliott Wave, day trading at the speed of light. This is all just shit. People think this stuff is true because they can buy a book, but there's like literally no evidence behind it.
Is there actually a book called Day Trading at the Speed of Light?
I would not be surprised. I mean,
I'm like, that's an awesome title. Day Trading at the Speed of Light.
I sat down with a guy who does trade at the speed of light in Singapore, but he's a professional trader with a staff of 25 and servers out the wazoo. And he's been doing this for 20 years. He kind of understands how to trade at the speed of light. You don't. Not you personally, but you personally, me personally. We don't have a freaking clue. We don't have the resources to do anything like that.
So what is, again, going back to the story of the Turtle Traders, and what's your, and I know it might be like naming your favorite child, but what's your favorite story or your favorite trader from the Turtle Traders?
So Jerry Parker is the most successful. He's been on my podcast. He's a very meat and potatoes kind of guy, very straightforward. I'm not going to retell any of his stories. People can find those online. He's a pretty luminous guy. He really has got out there and really told the story and given his insights over the years. There's a couple people that are perhaps less well known. There's one guy who's now deceased, a guy named Mike Shannon. When I first interviewed him, I asked him a question. I said, hey, is there anything? And he had started off as a bartender, this crazy background. I said, is there anything I've not asked you? We were just talking about how he got hired and all that kind of stuff. He actually went to the bottom of some library and found all the articles on Richard Dennis because he was in all the articles, read all the articles. So when he went to the interview, he basically was quoting Richard Dennis back to Richard Dennis. That was a good way to get liked. But I asked him in the interview all these years later, I said, hey, is there anything I've not asked you that you want to tell me? Kind of paused and hummed. And he said, you know, yeah, I was a criminal. I was like the largest coke dealer in Chicago. And Richard didn't know it when he hired me until, because I was working undercover for the FBI, until the FBI came in one day to brief him. And Dennis, who was famously known as pro-marijuana long before it ever became popular. I mean, Dennis was writing pro-marijuana pieces in the early 80s. Dennis wasn't really that. He didn't really care that much. Shannon kept on working. It was just kind of one of those crazy, crazy stories. Look, and there's also some stories in the turtle world. If people listen to this conversation, and I'm not naming names, people can go find names. There's some folks that really were just full of it. There were some people in the program that did exceptionally well, the majority. I've seen their track records. I posted their track records in my book. They were just the real deal. There were some that were not the real deal. There were some that were just kind of hangers-on, did not really go down the right path. Later on in life, I mean, you can find their stories on the internet and it kind of looks like life imploded. They just didn't really do the work. They kind of fell apart. Look, life is funny. You got to stay focused. You got to stay disciplined because even the people that were sitting there in 1983, 84, when the turtle thing started, even some of those people utterly failed and they had all of the advantages and they failed.
It's like so many things, though. It's like the quote, there's no such thing as an overnight success. And it's like people want that shortcut. I mean, hey, I'm as big a fan of Tim Ferriss as there is, but it's like the hacks only get you so far. At some point, you just got to put in the work and you got to have that passion and you got to show up and do all the right things. You gave a great example. You put in, if you drop wing nuts into this system, you're going to get wing nuts out the other side. I mean, that's just the way it works.
You make a great point about Tim Ferriss, who I'm fond of, because I think Tim did something very important. Tim basically helped to promote the idea of being an entrepreneur and to do it from anywhere, to use digital technology and to do it from anywhere. Now, some people will get caught up in the minutia. They'll be like, well, I heard Tim say this exact thing I have to do, and I did that, and it didn't work, so now Tim's a fake or something. It's like, no, that's not what he's doing. He's telling you the big picture. You have to get your dusty rear end off the ground and go do the work. But to blame, I know you weren't doing that, but to blame Tim, which some people do, some people blame me, probably some people blame you. You know what I say? Hey, look, the information is out there. You have to take personal responsibility. You have to do something with it. And if you don't send me any whiny emails because I'm just going to delete them anyways.
Yeah, I'd actually, again, going back to the point where I think 4-Hour Work Week was published, I think 2008 or somewhere in there, similar time frame to where I was looking to branch out into trading, because 4-Hour Work Week was pivotal for me because I had a business. I built up a business from when I was 22 in roughly 1994. I made every mistake that Ferriss said not to do. All I did was made myself a super stressful, highly demanding job. I mean, it was like, yeah, I had a business, which is awesome, but I took phone calls at 2 a.m. I took phone calls at 4 a.m. I made every single entrepreneurial mistake that you could. All I did was, I mean, the business was successful. but I was on the hook 24/7. So if you figured it out, I was making about 10 bucks an hour when I was the business owner. That's why I found Tim, found trading, and really started, and again, kind of looping back to what I already said, found trend following, found the turtle traders, and was like, wait a minute, if these Joe Blows from the newspaper can do it, maybe I can do it too.
We should clarify that the Joe Blows were definitely competent people.
Sure. Yeah, they weren't like from the homeless shelters.
No, but you know, one guy though, however, and he's deceased now too, but one guy was a security guard at the Chicago Board of Trade living over top of a saloon. Now, look, that doesn't mean he did not have a good IQ and wasn't a smart guy, but I think sometimes we all get caught up in some of that stuff. The reality is you got to dig a little deeper.
Now, I have to admit, listen to your podcast a lot when you got started. I think you're like 400 or 500 episodes in. I used to listen to it more. Love it. I tell you, you're really, really good at it. The only thing I blame is the fact that I'm podcasting myself. And I always blame Joe Rogan because, I mean, as much as I love Joe, I wish he wouldn't put out 4 3-hour podcasts a week. So it's like,
there's only so much time in the day.
Exactly. And it's like, damn it, Joe's got so many interesting guests. It's like, I can't keep up.
He's the only one I barely listen to besides doing my own thing too. I don't have time.
Why don't you listen, lack of a better term, give me a commercial, promote your podcast. Again, I listened to it in the early days back before Joe got started. I think you started before him, actually. What do you do on the podcast? Who do you have on there, et cetera?
My podcast started off as trading only. I still have traders on, but it's branched out. So I've had 6 Nobel Prize winners in economics. I've had every psychologist you can probably find under the sun talking about human behavior. One guy I had on, a guy named Robert Aumann, won the Nobel Prize in game theory. He has fantastic background. I had an investor on that some people might be familiar with. He's made himself over $1 billion. A guy named Howard Marks. I think my next guest on Thursday night Eastern is Tom Golisano. And Tom's made himself $3 billion starting the payroll processing company Paychex. I'll talk to, I've had Tim Ferriss on. I've had Ryan Holiday on. Tucker Max, you name it. A ton of people. I mean, look, at 800 plus episodes. I've talked to everybody.
You know how to drop the right names, man. I'm a huge Ryan Holiday fan, huge Tucker Max fan. You drop the right names to make me happy, man.
I don't do that to toot my horn. It's just like after you've done it. Yeah, you know, after you've done it for so long, I've talked to a lot of interesting people. I find there is a thread. There is a thread of thinking. I like people that can think. There's so many folks out there. If you watch public debate online, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or whatever, people deal in logical fallacies. People can't think. They can't add 2 + 2 together. Or if they add 2 + 2, they get 17.
Personally, I think they should. My recommendation to like Zuckerberg would be like rename Facebook Logical Fallacy, because it's, I mean, it's the biggest social network of them all. And I don't know if there's ever been a reasonable argument take place on Facebook.
I try to have reasonable arguments with people. But the moment I get the unreasonable, I mean, I don't know how many people I've blocked over the years. That's the easiest way to deal with it. Not because they might be a bad person or something, but life is short. If you're going to walk into a debate with somebody who likes to try to think, I do, you are going to bring something insane to the table. You have clearly not prepared. You're clearly not thinking. Then just, okay, go away. I don't, not being a mean guy or anything, but who cares? Go away. Come on, do the work. The work feels good. Make your mind tougher. Make your mind more flexible. Come on.
Which, I mean, obviously, maybe you have, maybe you haven't. But man, I've been working on them. But you got to get Jocko on your podcast, man.
I've not asked him. You know, the thing is when I look at some of the big shows, specifically like Tim's and Joe's, they bring a certain style of guest on it, and they have a certain carte blanche to bring whoever they want on with the listens they can get. But I also find that there's a whole different level of thinker out there that's probably never going to get on Joe or Tim's show who are absolutely brilliant. There's Nobel Prize winners that Tim and Joe are not going to have on, and I'm more than happy to speak with the Nobel Prize winners.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I agree. I didn't really think of it that way. Jocko's everywhere anyway, but I'm still going to try and get him just because I'm too much of a fanboy. But just a couple more things I wanted to ask you. I know this is kind of a broad question, but especially with your research in the turtle traders, kind of turning that, and I know it's not the best term, but I just always think of it as that guy on the street or that gal on the street into a successful trader. most of our listeners are new traders. They're coming to this podcast because they're looking to learn this stuff. We talk about the basics here. You're not talking about advanced anything here. It's more just kind of getting started. What's your best advice for Joe or Jane Sixpack that are 1 month into trying to pursue trading for realistic income? We're not talking to people that want to buy a Lambo next week. Okay. I don't want to talk to those people at all. What's the advice for somebody that wants to make some good money that can improve their life over time?
I think the first thing is to think about when one will enter and when one will exit. So if we talk about buy and hold, which is the mantra, you're basically just buying. There's no exit. But if you're going to be a trader has to have an exit. You got to know that exit before you ever get in. If you're a trader, you're going to have your entry rule. I'm going to enter XYZ market. You're going to have to figure out what markets you're going to follow, what markets you're going to track. It should not be everything. It should be a narrow universe, well under 100 things you should be following in your life. You do not need to follow thousands and thousands of stocks. They're all correlated at 100% to begin with, so you're just overkill. Once you have that group of markets to follow, you need a way to say, I'm in. Okay, now you place a trade. Now what? Well, the now what should have been known before you got in. Meaning, if you're going to get in, you have to know before you get in when the hell you're getting out. If you don't know when you're getting out, when you get in, you're back at Vegas at the freaking one-armed bandit stuffing the slot machine.
Perfect. Again, I know you have no time to listen to this podcast, but I promise you that is something that I talk about in 90% of these episodes is have a plan is what I call it. I mean, it's like, and have a rationale. And obviously you've gotten the emails, you've talked to the people. It blows me away how many people are like, I'm in this stock. What do I do? First of all, I'm like, okay, why'd you buy it? Well, it was going up. Okay. Well, that was it. Okay. What's your stop? Well, I'll stop out if it doesn't work. And I'm like, what is any, you're talking gibberish here. You bought it for one reason because it was going up. You're going to stop out if it doesn't work. Does that mean it drops 1%, 10%, 100%? I love that. Thank you. Because it's something that I preach all the time.
Let me add on top of that though, the turtle mentality, which is this turtle trading that we've been talking about, this nickname is based on a form of trading called trend following, which is another title of one of my books. This mentality is very different than what most new people expect. It was different for me. Most new people expect, okay, I need to know what the crop reports say. I need to know what the analysts say about Microsoft. What's the PE ratio? What's the balance sheet? What's all of this data? Data that never ends, never ends.
Oh, especially now. I think about back when the turtles were trading.
There was still the Fed back then. There was
sure, fair enough.
The data never ends. So all of this data. So you got to say to yourself, okay, my first goal is to enter. My second goal is to exit and make some money. If you're using all this data, how the hell do you decide what's useful, what's not useful, what's valid, what's not valid? It's overwhelming. And you're competing against the likes of Warren Buffett and Goldman Sachs, who actually do know how to use this information in a way at a different level than you. The great thing about the turtle story was they said, take all that information, can it, put it to the side, don't think about it. What the turtles were taught, when the market is moving up, you should be going with the market. When the market is going down, you should be going with the market. What you do is you take all of that fundamental information and you reduce it to one number only, which is the price of the market. For example, if Tesla is at 100, you decide, okay, Tesla's moving up. I'm going to get into it. It moved to 150. I'm going to get into Tesla. Hold on. That's an all-time high. 150 at one point in time and Tesla was an all-time high. Okay, so now I'm long Tesla at 150. That's the all-time high. People are thinking, oh my God, I got to buy cheap. I want to wait for the pullback. No, you don't. You want to be going for momentum. Now you buy Tesla at 150. What do? You wait till you get a stop. That's the name of the game. Now, the thing is, when you trade this way, when you trade on price, when you trade on momentum, if you got in at that 150 on Tesla, you don't have to know why it went to 1,000 where it seems to be going. You don't have to know any reason why it went there, because at the end of the day, forget the name of the market, take Tesla, throw that away. If a market, whatever market, goes from 100 to 1,000, why would you care what name that market is, what stock it is? Why would you care what the name is? If you're on board and it goes from 100 to 1,000, why do you care what the name is? You don't care what the name is. You could care less what the name is. All you care about is, did I get on board and go from 100 to 1,000? That's what's important. The name is not important. The fundamentals are not important. What they're saying on CNBC, Bloomberg, et cetera, not important. Wall Street Journal, not important. New York Times, not important. What's on Facebook? What's on Twitter? Finance Twitter, not important. Zero importance. The daily riffraff, the daily analysis, not important. None of it's important. The only thing that matters is, were you on board when it went from 100 to 1,000? Now, if you have some deep-seated daddy psychological issue where you need to talk to people all the time and you need to kind of share your feelings, okay, then I get it. But that's not about making money. That's your deep-seated daddy issue.
I love that you chose that example, because it's the perfect stock for that, because it's, you look at one Tesla crashes somewhere in Mississippi and everyone loses their mind. What does that matter if the stock's up every single day for the last 4 months? I mean, obviously there's red days, but all you got to do is draw a trend line going back to last October or whatever. And it's like, none of that noise matters. And you could read every single article on both sides of that. And you could dig into the fundamentals and you could see Elon's crazy tweets, but none of it matters when the stock just goes up every day.
All of the fundamental information, I'll be point blank about this, all of the fundamental information about Tesla, there's absolutely no way that anybody listening has any evidence that that fundamental information in Tesla is anything other than mental masturbation. That's all it is.
Well said. Love it. Love it. Kind of last couple questions. I got two more for you. Do you have any, again, I try not to be too much of a fanboy, but do you have any upcoming books, any upcoming projects, anything you're working on?
There's a trader that I've had on my podcast who I've had on a lot. His name is Tom Basso. He was featured in the book, The New Market Wizards. Two books that I would recommend that your readers definitely check out if they've not seen. Market Wizards, New Market Wizards.
It was Jack Schwager came on about a month ago. He was awesome.
Tom Basso is featured in The New Market Wizards. Tom kind of, he spent a lot of time on my podcast. We decided to go ahead, me and him, to do a book together using his podcast episodes as a foundation. So that's coming in 2020. Something else is in the works, a little bit of another documentary I did one years ago, and that is in the works and coming.
Which I remember that. That was crap. Was it cheap?
10 years ago. 10 years ago, about the financial crisis.
Was awesome, by the way.
This new one is going to be in the headspace of where we've been talking today. The documentary before was called Broke. There was a sheep on the cover that was shaved. That's why you were
there. Fair enough. Okay, that's where it was coming from. All right. Which I loved. I remember watching that back then. I mean, so well done. Man, it's pretty wild to think back. That was that long ago. But yeah, definitely check out Broke. Is it everywhere? I'm assuming.
What's everywhere? It's been 10 years. It's online. You can view it online. It's on Vimeo. You can rent it on Vimeo, kind of stuff.
Fair enough. Perfect. Perfect. Awesome. So no, highly recommend it. Love that.
I was going to say the trend following book, there's been 5 editions. If people do check that out, they should check out the newest edition. It's like 3 pounds. It's 220,000 words. If you can't finish reading it because maybe you have some kind of mental imbalance, you can use it as a weapon to kill people.
Last question is, and I've been kind of curious about this for years, really, was fortunate enough to have Jim Rogers on the podcast about, I think it was back last summer. Jim famously relocated to Asia, and I talked about his rationale and his why. I know you, I might be wrong. I think you're full time there. You spend most of your time there. As a guy that my kids are kind of growing up, I'm always kind of looking for options. What was your why behind moving to Asia? Was it taxation or was it just, what was it?
I've had a chance to go spend time with Jim multiple times over the years. He's been on my podcast too. I've had a chance to, I'm only about an hour and a half flight from Singapore, but he's great. I was happily spending time in America for most of my life. And I got hired on a speaking tour of Asia in 2013. It was going to be a 4-month tour. I was going to be in, 10 countries. When it was over, I said to myself, I really don't have any desire to leave. So I stayed. That was it. That was the rationale. And the energy, if you're in any mega Asian city, whether that's Tokyo, Shanghai, Hong Kong, Shenzhen, Kuala Lumpur, Singapore, Saigon, Bangkok. These places have energy that America doesn't have. Now, you can find a hell of a lot of energy in New York City, no doubt. But beyond New York City and perhaps Vegas, but the kind of Vegas energy is a little bit different. That's more crazy. But the energy in Asian cities cannot be replicated. It can't be replicated. You literally wake up every day saying, let's go take it on. Whereas we all know what can happen to us in America. We get a house in the burbs. We sit around. We get fat. We watch TV. We see the same neighbors every week. And it gets pretty damn boring. I've watched people come to Asia. I've watched people specifically come to Saigon, where I spend a lot of time, to watch their attitudes, to watch their energy change. It's amazing. Too few Americans, we really don't get out and do it. But I got to say, look, what are you holding on to? If you got some cash, if you got some mobility, all you have holding you back is fear.
No, that's incredible. I mean, you know, it's one of the things I have to admit. Again, I'm almost 50 and I've never been to Asia. And just hearing Jim's story and especially hearing yours, I kind of figured that's what it was, is just kind of that whole vibe, that whole developing nation.
It's not just developing. We're talking cities. Most mega Asian cities make almost every city in America look like a piker. I'm not being mean or anti-American. I'm American. I'm happy to have my passport. But the energy and the building and the economic development and the growth and the people, what's happening across Asia, that's where the middle class growth is. I mean, you got a kid in America and he's learning Spanish over some Asian language. I would argue that most parents in America have failed.
I mean, I have to admit, as a parent, my kids are taking Spanish because it's the only language that's offered. I mean, I'm glad they're learning it. But I mean, obviously, Jim's a huge advocate of that, teaching his kids Mandarin and everything. But I totally agree.
It's tough.
It does bum me out. You know.
Listen, as you say, because we're roughly the same age, as you say, as you talk about these issues, it's tough. And I'm not trying to be too cavalier. I get the fears. I get the great unknown. But we're all connected. The one thing that you learn, which is fantastic, except for mainland China, when you go to mainland China, basically nothing works. I mean, I'm talking Google, Facebook, your email, forget it. It doesn't work. Hopefully your VPN will stay working. But everywhere else, you land and you're connected and you're not far away. Yeah, you might be distance far away to people, but you're still close. We just don't have that sense until we go and do it. Once you go, then you get that feeling of like, oh, I'm not that far away. And then you get to have this whole other second life that most people don't get a chance to experience. Highly recommend it.
Well, I would like to thank you, Michael. Again, we met, geez, going on 10 years ago. Your books, the podcast, I mean, can't recommend it highly enough to all of you out there listening. I mean, go to trendfollowing.com. I mean, Michael's got multiple websites, but the one I have in front of me right now is trendfollowing.com. There's links to the books, the podcast, tons. I mean, he puts tons of free stuff out there. I mean, listen, I mean, first of all, I think you should buy the $20 books. If you're not willing to buy $20 or $30 books, you're not going to succeed no matter what. If you're not willing to commit that $20, $30, and 8 hours to read the book or whatever it is. But he also puts out tons of free content and has been putting it out free for, when did your podcast start? When did you start?
2013. I got to add a side note on the books though. I have to say, as you're giving me a promotion to buy for people to buy a $20 book, I think over the course of my lifetime, I've purchased over 1,000 books from other people. You're right on about books. So just to clarify, it's not just me making some money. Of course, I'm a capitalist. I like to make money, but hey, I buy books and I have been buying books like crazy forever.
I'm an avid reader. I talk about it on the podcast all the time. 90% of the reason I wanted you on here is because of your writing and how valuable I think it is. And I just think that it's like, especially to me, and I know we joked about social media and Facebook a little bit, but it's like, I've always been an avid reader, especially since the election, as social media just went completely off the rails in 2016. I've been pulling back more and more and just reading more books because it's like, man, you have to actually think. Obviously, we all know how the algos work at like Facebook. I mean, they just put in stuff in front of you to make you mad. That's how the algo works. I mean, just if you want to learn an investment strategy, learn to be disciplined, learn to repeat some sort of system, go to books, man. Get off the internet.
I concur.
I'd like to thank you again, Michael. And this was good stuff, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it.
I see a time when those awake will understand how to make money in up, down, and surprise markets. Whether new trader or experienced, college student or financial advisor, protecting against a crash or just trying to make a lot of money, Trend Following offers everyone an answer in uncertain times. To get started immediately, send me an email, michael@covell.com. I will send you the right trend following steps to take along with my free video. But if you want to buy and hold, trust the government and trust Wall Street. This is absolutely not for you.